I don't often observe Memorial Day very carefully. I don't know what moved me this past Monday, it was also my birthday, to sit out in the Veterans Cemetery on Lions View. Drove out there in the morning to sit there, and I wasn't sure what had moved me until I sat there for a while. But I looked around at the innumerable white gravestones and thought about the sacrifices that have been made in defense of our Union throughout the generations and throughout our history. And I thought about that a bit ruefully, and it was because of something I had read in the New York Times by Margaret Renkel, an author in Nashville. The headline captures it all. We were called to sacrifice as a nation. We didn't answer. That in the past year plus, we have failed to do some of the basics to care for each other, to make small sacrifice for the common good. William James, over a century ago, William James, the psychologist and philosopher, had an article called Proposing the Moral Equivalent of War. This was in a flurry, I'm guessing, of public conversation about pacifism and how to avoid future wars. He said that we need war, nonetheless, that war has beneficial aspects to humankind, that it makes us rigorous and disciplined and hardy. So he suggested overtaking nature. It was a very poor suggestion, his outcome, but in some sort of common service, he suggested that we overtake nature and run her down, just as in the sort of early Zionist ideal. But I think what Margaret Renkel in the New York Times pointed out is that we just went through the moral equivalent of war, that we faced a common, so to speak, enemy in the COVID-19 virus, that we buckled down for 15 or 16 months to address a shared national, and in this case, international problem that demanded small and large sacrifices from each of us, just as we don't allow people to smoke inside because it will infect the lungs of others. We don't allow people to, or we ask people to wear seatbelts for the common good and safety. And we had rationing during World War II. We all stepped up and made small sacrifices among ourselves for the greater good. Somehow, we couldn't be bothered to do that in the past year and a half. We couldn't be bothered to put masks on. We couldn't be bothered to get vaccinated. We couldn't be bothered to stand carefully apart from each other, some and all of us. I don't know what that means about us, but it does concern me. And I think, as always, it doesn't just say something about America, but probably something deeper about the human condition, that we are, at some level, very atomistic, that we are individualistic, and that libertarianism, something that I agree with in parts, is a nature, a part of human nature. That we talk about cultures that are more collectivistic, but probably almost every culture, every person looks out for him or herself and maybe their children first and foremost. So I was comforted to see that that's not so out of left field, that the parasha is also talking about people making poor decisions that involve very little sacrifice on behalf of others. This is the parsha, we often call it the spies, but it's really scouts. They scout out, they do reconnaissance, I think is the most accurate description of what they're doing. They're asked, the commandment at the very beginning of the parsha is to see the land, to inquire what it is. And the Midrash, Rashi and the Midrash say, what sort of land is that? There are lands that produce strong people and lands that produce weak people, lands that produce large populations and lands that produce small populations. And there are theories, some of which have modest validity, some of which have very little, about the way, for example, Protestantism inculcated certain values and Confucianism inculcated other values, about the way that rice cultivation inculcates different values to wheat cultivation. They are kind of interesting theories, but I'm not sure they hold great water. But the history of America, like the history of any culture, like the history of any nation or even any family, inculcates certain values and certain perspectives and worldview. And in reference to the past year, a certain place on the spectrum between individualism and communitarianism. And I've sort of indicated this before. As an American or as a political theorist, I tend to like free markets. But as a Jew, Judaism doesn't have much interest in free markets. So I place myself between those two difficult poles and try to reconcile that paradox. But the truth is, American exceptionalism and American sort of adventure and the spirit of manifest destiny and others, the extreme of that is narcissism. And that's a problem we've faced in my lifetime. I'm sure we've faced it before. And the inability to do for others and the inability to see at, from time to time, not always, certainly World War II seemed to be a strong exception to this, that we all have a common enterprise, that we all have a common struggle, and that we all have a common shared destiny, not in every particular, but in many parts. And so this human reticence to sacrifice, to give, to pick up litter for so long. My favorite scene of all in Mad Men was not the casual racism or sexism or drinking on the job, but there was a scene very early on where the family was out on a picnic and they decided to get back in their car. And instead of cleaning up after themselves, they just shook out their picnic basket and all their trash on the side of the road and walked away. And I had forgotten that in my youth that was common. And then there was a large campaign against littering and it changed America's perspective. So we can be trained to cultivate a spirit of communitarianism and community. We can be trained to cultivate a spirit of altruism and awareness. And we can be trained to do the small deeds that require sharing and sacrifice. But Shneur Zalman, one of the early generations of the Lubavitch dynasty, said that the reason the spies who were leaders of Israel and men of lofty stature, they were understood to be senior leadership, so to speak, didn't want to enter the land because it would entail more mitzvot, that agriculture and sacrificial laws would be required of them, and they would have to sacrifice and put aside their agriculture in portion. They would have to sacrifice firstborn animals. They would have to do such and such that would not necessarily impoverish them as much as provide and create difficulty and challenge. So they said, I don't want to do that. I'm going to just gainsay all the value of the land, and then I won't have to do extra work. So what I like about that, and it's comforting to me in the past year, is this isn't new. This is millennia old. Human beings in general would rather not pick up litter. Human beings in general would rather smoke cigars where they want to and not be told where they can. Human beings in general would not give to charity. It's a burden. It's a burden. If you think about Gates's giving pledge or Gates and Buffett's giving pledge, you know, I've earned so much money. Why would I want to give it away? And there is a smallness, mochin de katnut is the way that's described, I think, more in the Hasidic teaching, a small-mindedness, tsarut ayin in the early rabbinic teaching of Torah, a narrowness of eye that says, you know, this boat is mine. I can dig a hole in it. I can drill a hole in it. We're sharing the boat. This half is mine, right? And so there is a person found gathering sticks. It was not in the reading we had. It was after the reading we had, who ruins the second Sabbath of the Israelite people by gathering sticks, by going out of the camp and collecting sticks, presumably for fire. But the issue was certainly carrying and going outside the camp and violating sort of communal norms. And Rashi in the Talmud notice, you know, and this is a teaching we've heard probably before, that if Israel had kept the first Shabbat and the second one, that no evil impulse could have overtaken them, and they would have been ensured a place in the world to come, that this is their great shame. Okay. So fundamentally, human beings are complacent. Fundamentally, human beings are not attentive or observant. And fundamentally, perhaps, human beings are a little bit selfish. Let's acknowledge the reality of humanity before we try to change it. Let's be candid about our faults. Let's be humble to admit that we're not perfect and we're always striving towards betterness, but we will never reach perfection. And by some estimates, it's not even clear that God reaches perfection. So we start with little things. We start with small changes. And that's, I think, the nature of mitzvot and the nature of the Jewish enterprise is to, through bits and pieces, through like separating the mother bird from its young when you go to gather the eggs, like responding and respecting parents, like tzitzit. So I pointed out to you that tzitzit are in this week's parasha, and they are so important for some reason. This tiny little mitzvah of a few strings is so important that it's one third of our reading of the Shema. What is tzitzit? Some people say they're like tying a string around your finger to remind you to do mitzvot, to remind you of God's presence. Maybe that's the nature of a kippah as well. But I think they are a very small building block of a mindful life that recognizes that you are not the sum total of moral judgment, and you are not the most important thing in the moral universe, and you are but a small player in God's grand design, and that's okay. That's kind of beautiful. That's kind of liberating, to be honest. And that through practices of mindfulness and attention to the fact that you have to give, you have to do, even when it hurts, even when you don't want to, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's boring, even when it seems ridiculous. I pointed out, I have a friend who's a former Mormon, and he likes to mock the Mormon clothing. I said, are you kidding? Every religion does ridiculous things. Look at this. I wanted to take out my tefillin and show my tefillin. Every religion can't be judged on it, on silliness. That's not a fair condition for religion. But I think the silliness is to account for, to draw our eyes to the fact that we're not the supreme arbiter of all value, and that we are not the most important thing in the universe. Bachya ibn Pakuda in Duties of the Heart quotes a saying that I've, you know, he was a millennium ago, so I don't know where the saying is. No sin is small if done persistently, and no sin is big if one beseeches forgiveness for it. But likewise, no mitzvah is small if you do it persistently. And so this is an everyday mitzvah, right? That little things add up. To quote David Perkins, formerly of the congregation, the acts of prayer and the acts of mitzvot tread a course, a furrow, tread a change in the design of the universe. And that if we do the same thing day by day, person by person, congregation by congregation, generations in and generations out, it will change the arc of the moral universe. So I invite you, like our ancestors who fought in World War II, like those who sacrificed mightily in the civil rights movement, those who sacrificed in Vietnam, those who sacrificed for things small and large in that graveyard across from Lakeshore Park, some of whom did not die in a war, some of whom were not combat veterans, but all of whom gave, that you think of yourselves as servants, that you transform your perspective in small. And again, it's from a poll. The American extreme of, you know, what Tocqueville noticed about us is that we're very individualistic, to the Jewish extreme of being very communitarian, not communist, but communitarian, community-minded. That the Sifre, one of the collections of Midrash, says that there are those who call themselves servants, it's quotes from this week's parsha, whom the Holy One, blessed be God, also calls servants. And there are those who call themselves servants, whom the blessed, Holy Blessed One does not call servants. And there are those who do not call themselves servants, whom the blessed Holy Blessed One calls servants. I think the ideal being that you don't realize that you're a servant, but God recognizes it. And maybe the second best is that you think of yourself as a servant and God also acknowledges it. But that's a very powerful form of leadership and a very powerful form of moral stance, to understand oneself as a servant to a larger thing, whether it's God, community, or nation.